Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com. This Israel report is brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands.
It is 7 minutes to six. It's the Israel report today, brought to you by Knan Lidor, renowned Israeli journalist, and going to take us through the headlines happening now as we speak. Knan, good afternoon. How are you doing?
Hi, good afternoon. Everything is well.
I noticed that things aren't all so well in terms of what the World Court has just decided. I've got the Times of Israel open in front of me. They've published a couple of seconds ago that the World Court says that Israel must now allow UN aid to Gaza to ensure the needs of Palestinians are met. I presume they mean give it to Hamas.
Well, ultimately, yes, but the immediate clash is over UNRWA. This is an attempt by the World Court, to which is a UN entity, to hold up the UN aid agency for Palestinians, UNRWA, that Israel outlawed about 18 months ago.
Because it proved and established connections to Hamas and terrorism on numerous occasions. Why? Who sat on the World Court? How could they make a finding like that, that there's no connection? I'm struggling to come to terms with this decision.
No, the World Court isn't denying that some members of UNRWA and some facilities of UNRWA have been used by Hamas. That fundamentally, in the way that the system is set up, this is not a Hamas arm. And Israel is saying, well, it's true that it's not on the books, but if you look at the pattern of activity over the years, if you look at the body of evidence, including people from UNRWA filmed on October 7th, carrying the body of slain Israeli soldiers, and possibly even live ones, we don't have all the footage, then a pattern emerges and it's undeniable. And on that count, Israel outlawed UNRWA's activity here in Israel. And of course, the UN, it's one arm of the UN vouching for another arm. So it makes really perfect sense.
So how does this play out, Knan, in terms of the fact that Israel is now legally obliged to provide aid through UNRWA? It has its own domestic law which stops it from doing that. What happens if Israel doesn't comply with this judgment?
Well, the rulings of the ICJ are not legally binding because unless they are upgraded to the Security Council, in which there is a chance of, you know, intervention, unless it's vetoed. But Israel is in violation of multiple court rulings, this court's rulings, including our separation barrier. So this is just declarative right now. Unless the great powers, America, China, and Russia, band together in order to force this on Israel, which is unlikely because of the Trump administration's rather famous dislike for UN institutions generally and the UN court specifically.
Kalan, I've got a whole list of issues making news in Israel today. I'm happy to go through them one by one. I'm just interested whether there's anything that you particularly wanted to bring to our attention before I go there.
I have to confess that I've been catching up with the news because I was just on vacation in the Netherlands, family vacation. But I am up to speed on what happened because I've already had 2 days of work behind me, so please lead me through it.
Okay, so I want you to talk to me if you can. I'd like to just humanize it a little bit. The bodies of the slain hostages who were returned yesterday, I believe Tamir Adar and Ari Zalmanovitz. Do we know anything about them, who they were, where they died, etc.?
Well, one of them was a founder of Nir Oz, This was indeed Tamir Adal from the family, sorry, the family that founded Nir Oz. And he's a third generation of the place. So one of those kibbutzniks with really deep roots. Arya Zelmanovich was a founder of Nir Oz, and Tamir Adal was a third generation resident. You know, this is the classic kibbutznik
Melech Haaretz.
Person, Melech Haaretz, exactly. The people who just grabbed whatever meager arms they had at their disposal to really defend their home of generations. And symbolically and tragically, they're also interred in Nir Oz in a little cemetery. Nir Oz is not even repatriated. It's not even repopulated. But the cemetery is still, you know, active, and luckily Chevra Kedisha can actually perform burials there. And the community got together around this in anticipation for the funeral. So it was a very moving moment.
Times of Israel also reporting that the UK is, at the request of the United States, deploying a small number of military officers to Israel. That really surprised me. What's that all about?
An attempt led by the Trump administration, and this is also part of the J.D. Vance visit that I know you discussed earlier in the day, to internationalize the conflict between Gaza and Israel, to kind of put in place a robust group of babysitters that would limit Israel's ability to attack Hamas, because, of course, the stakes are much higher when internationals are involved. The risks of hurting them are much, of hitting them are much higher. So that would, and of course, to signal to Hamas that you're in the big leagues now. It's not only the Israelis, but you have the full force of the international community, of the Western world, rather, on your case if you violate. So it's kind of a signal to both people. And it's the UK, it's the US, and it's Turkey, and it's Egypt. It's a show of we're all invested in this, and we're not going to let the Gaza, the Hamas, the Gaza, and Israel mess up this ceasefire, which of course is good news to those who want to see the violence end, but bad news to those of us who had hoped for a fundamental change in Gaza, because it cements this conflict as merely an upgraded round of hostilities with no real change on the ground.
I need to think that one through. I thought the agreement was supposed to have taken care of those concerns in terms of requiring Hamas to disarm certain to leave the territory before funds would be allocated to rebuild. Is it correct to frame it in the way that you did? Are you that pessimistic about this proposed deal?
Well, of course, everything you listed is in the agreement, but terrorist groups are not known for dismantling themselves, especially not in the Middle East. But the best we can hope for, and it's a pretty, that's a, to me at least, that's a pretty optimistic scenario and a realistic one, is that Israel, despite all these checks and balances put on internationally, still mows the lawn. This is the term we use, like a kasechet hadeshe, in the Gaza Strip, whenever Hamas tries to reestablish its infrastructure. And we have a model of this in Lebanon, where the IDF punishes Hezbollah quite relentlessly for any violation of the ceasefire, or I should say perceived violation, because Hezbollah doesn't see it as a, or argues it's not a violation. But if we have the same situation in Gaza, then that means that at least, although we still have Hamas on our doorstep, and it still tries to smuggle goods from Egypt or from the sea, at least we can manage the situation so it doesn't grow back into the monster that pounced on us on October 7th.
And that surely has to be the lesson that was the takeaway from October the 7th, that never ever will any Israeli government allow themselves to be lulled into a sense of security that doesn't really exist again.
Right. The only question is whether the level of enforcement from the Trump administration will allow this. The fact that J.D. Vance was dispatched here just as the ceasefire was starting to get derailed because of blatant Hamas violations does not herald great news, because this is, if my analysis is correct, this is just tying Israel's hands not to enforce the ceasefire, belying the rather optimistic scenario that I just described.
Kanaan, we have a listener, his name is Anton, he's listening in Cape Town, and he sent a message through this afternoon saying Hamas stated that they only signed the first part of the agreement. Did the whole agreement get signed or only part of it?
Well, much of the agreement was not signed. Anton is correct. Also, by the way, the agreement with Iran on the dialing back of its nuclear program during the Obama years was never signed. Much of these agreements are spoken and are really understandings, but because we have a Western orientation, we sometimes tend to describe this as a signed contract. This is nothing of the sort. There were parts that the Egyptian and Qatari negotiators insisted Hamas sign on. These were a few points, but those 20 points that were outlined rather generally, but the terms under which the points will be delivered, they weren't signed on.
Boy, oh boy, oh boy. Intrigue continues. Final question for you this afternoon. Again, reporting that Benjamin Netanyahu has fired his national security advisor, Tsachi Hanegbi. What's the background story there? Why?
Tsachi Hanegbi is something of Likud royalty. His mother, Geula Cohen, was a pillar of the Israeli right. She was actually right of Likud.
She was
he joined
something.
Likud.
Yeah.
Exactly. Very good. And he joined Likud, but he was from this established political family, just like Dan Meridor. They were called the princes of Likud. And they are the closest thing to an opposition Netanyahu has. He's a more populist leader, and he likes to slot his people in key positions. But those princes of the Likud, they still have an electorate within Likud base, so they win primaries, or they get good slots on the primaries, I should say.
Yeah.
And that gives them more confidence than Netanyahu lackeys like, say, Dudi Amsalem, although he actually went off the leash too, but from the more rank and file. So that gives them more autonomy. And, you know, Netanyahu has some incredible achievements to his credit, nurturing a successor. A future generation within Likud isn't one of them.
Mm-hmm.
Speaking of mowing the grass, he was always very diligent in mowing the grass of Likud leadership. Now, Tsachi Hanegbi he's not a very popular guy. Like I said, he has a rather elitist base of support. So Netanyahu can move on him and say, hey, you were the head of the National Security Council during October 7th, and you're going to, your head will roll for this. This will be an admission of guilt by the government, by the establishment. That way Netanyahu kind of deflects and he sacrifices the people under him to the people who are saying, hey, it's your fault. And he gets rid of a rather independent voice. So it's a double win for Netanyahu, but it's a loss for Likud, because Tsachi Hanegbi has decades of experience in all areas, economy, security, transportation, you name it. He's done it all. And this vast cache of knowledge is, for now, subtracted from the Israeli government. So it's a story of national politics, but also of petty politics within the Likud.
Fascinating, fascinating stuff. So much more we could talk about. Israel is the gift that keeps on giving. One day we'll have an Israel report. We'll say to me, I'm sorry, there's absolutely nothing to talk about. I look forward to that day. Kanaan, toda raba. It was great chatting to you.
That Israel report was brought to you by the Blue Agency. Your Israel property is in good hands. Owning properties in Israel can be a great investment, but challenging to manage if you're based abroad. The Blue Agency will manage every aspect of your property, finding and vetting tenants, maintaining your property and getting it rental ready, negotiating contracts and collecting rentals, reporting back to you regularly. The Blue Agency has built a reputation for trust and confidentiality over 20 years. The Blue Agency, your Israel property is in good hands. Contact us at www.theblueagency.com.